Looking to diversify your business portfolio with a high-growth opportunity? Discover Mathnasium Learning Center, the number one math-only education franchise. For more than 20 years, Mathnasium has triumphed in a booming multi-billion-dollar tutoring industry with over 1,200 centers worldwide. Ranked on Entrepreneur's Franchise 500 list for 11 consecutive years, Mathnasium is low-cost, recession-resistant, and offers significant growth potential in an expanding market. The demand for math education is skyrocketing, driven by declining math scores and the growing need for STEM skills in today's workforce. What makes Mathnasium a smart investment? Affordable entry point and quick build-out time. High-earning centers with seven-figure annual revenue. Industry-leading 30% plus average profit margins. Trusted brand with high customer satisfaction scores. And here is something extra. They're offering a 25% discount on the franchise fee for former teachers and veterans. Whether you're expanding your franchise portfolio or making your first investment, Mathnasium gives you the systems and support you need to succeed. Get your free franchise information kit at mathnasiumfranchise.com or call 888-763-2604. That's mathnasiumfranchise.com or call 888-763-2604.
From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show that solves entrepreneurs' toughest problems. I'm Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, and each week I take a problem that you're probably dealing with and get tactical solutions from people who have been there and solved that. So let's get solving. Can you tell me what you think this story is about? Like, just thematically speaking, like, what is the problem that you had to solve?
The problem I'm trying to solve is not dying as a company.
This is a founder named Siki.
I'm Siki Chen. I'm the CEO and founder of Runway, or a next generation finance platform for growing companies. And this is the fourth time I've been CEO, third time I've been a founder. Glad to be here.
And today, Siki is going to tell us a story. A story about, as he said, trying not to die as a company. This is a story, by the way, from a previous startup of his called Sandbox, where he was CEO. Which did the impossible. It nearly ran out of money. It was desperate for cash. It was overlooked by every VC firm and for very good reasons. And then it bet the whole farm on a crazy idea and succeeded. I'll be honest, when I got on a call with Siki, I knew only the basic outlines of this story, but I was not prepared for how rich and detailed it is. This is not just a story about how not to die as a company. It is really a story about how venture capital works and how to understand investors and how to take calculated risks and how companies evolve and what it takes to succeed. And at its heart, there is also another interesting question, which is this. In business, what is the difference between a stupid idea and an incredible one? Because Siki will be the first to tell you, when he first heard this idea for Sandbox, the company he would eventually become CEO of.
I actually thought it was a really stupid idea for a company.
So, all right, no more preamble. Are you ready to hear this stupid idea that nearly died, but that taught Siki a lot about how to survive as an entrepreneur? It all starts back in 2016, when Siki gets a call from his friend Steve Zhao.
The pitch to me was, my friend calls me up and he says, hey, Siki, I'm thinking about starting a new company. He's been an entrepreneur. He ran this casual games company in Hong Kong for a number of years, and we knew each other since college. And he said, hey, have you heard about escape rooms? And I go, yes, I understand the concept. I've never been to one. He's like, did you know it's like a really big market? It's like an $8 billion a year market. And I was like, get out of here. There's no way. And I did some research, like, turned out he was right. And he said, okay, you know what the problem with escape rooms is? I'm like, what? He says, the problem is that you can only play it once. So what if we did escape rooms, but with VR? And I said, that is probably the dumbest pitch I've ever heard.
Hearing that frustrates many people who cannot get investors. And they're like, nobody will take my idea seriously. And then people say, that's a dumb idea. And I invested in it. Can you unpack that? Why do you invest in a dumb idea?
Because people overvalue the idea. Like, okay. Ideas are like assholes. Everyone has one.
Uh-huh.
And what the reason why I invested in this person is because they proved to be a competent entrepreneur and operator whom I respected. And so at the earliest of stages, people invest in people,
mm-hmm.
not in the idea.
So what you're really saying is, I heard a dumb idea, but I know a really smart person who is in the process of identifying an opportunity in a market. And if they don't quite figure that out, they're going to figure something else out. And that's why I'm investing.
Yeah. And I think in this case, and I think in many cases too, what a really disruptive idea is oftentimes indistinguishable from dumb or a toy.
Hmm.
And yeah, if it didn't seem dumb, it would have been obvious to everyone, and it would have already been tried and done. And so one of the traits of a good entrepreneur is an immunity to shame, because you have to live with like what people think is a dumb idea for a really long time and still go and do it, right? Airbnb mm-hmm. seemed like a really bad idea for quite a long time, and many yeah. people said so on the record. And Sandbox is certainly one of those examples.
All right. So to recap, it is 2016. Siki gets a call from a friend who has a really dumb idea. And Siki says, yeah, dumb idea, but really smart person who I trust, who I think can figure this out. And so I will invest. What happens from there is wild. We are going to take a short break. And when we're back, how Siki gets involved in this company and then how it finds its way through thicket of massive problems that nearly bleeds it to death. Coming up after the break. All right, we're back. Before the break, you heard the setup. It's 2016. Siki Chen gets a call from his friend Steve Zhao, and Siki invests in Sandbox. This was good timing. In 2016, Siki actually had a company called Hey Inc., and he sold it to Postmates and then became the VP of product growth at Postmates. Then the Postmates team went on a fundraising tour in Asia, which took them through Hong Kong, and Hong Kong is where Sandbox had built its first ever VR escape room. So this means that Siki can go and check out the Sandbox escape room experience, which he thought would be so stupid. But you know what? He was very impressed.
You can be in this room and effectively have this holodeck type of experience with full body motion capture with your friends. So you're in this physical space, and in VR, you see your friends as these virtual characters, and you can actually high five them, shake their hand, have them jump up and down. None of which I was expecting, but that was the experience. It's
right.
A Star Trek holodeck.
Okay. And that's cool.
The hardware, they operated the store, they built a game. It was super fun. I was sweating. They have like fans. And I came out at an experience and I said, that is the coolest experience I've seen since the iPhone. And that is the moment where I decided I need to quit Postmates, move to Hong Kong, and work here at this really dumb company instead.
Which is a validation of the thing that you said a moment ago about investing in the dumb idea, because it was a dumb idea at the very beginning. But look at that. Steve turned it into something pretty cool.
Arguably still is a dumb idea. Right?
Like, enough.
It's many things remain dumb ideas, but
yeah.
The difference between a successful founder and one who isn't is people willing to go and see that dumb idea through for a very, very long time.
Okay, so you go to Hong Kong, and what happens?
So I go to Hong Kong. I think there was maybe 15 people in the company. I joined as chief product officer. And one of the things I did immediately is I put together a financial model for the first time, which mm-hmm. is what led to this company. And the reason why I did that is because it's an enormously complex business, right? You have to build hardware. You have to operate a retail store. You have to build content and games. You have to build technology infrastructure. And then you have to like build a booking system. It's a pretty big operation. And in particular with retail, it's a very capital intensive operation.
Yeah.
So you might drop like $100,000 on a store, and then you have to hire people. And so cash flow is really important mm-hmm. for ability to scale. So putting out a financial model is critical. And what happened is I put together this financial model, and discovered that basically we're going to be out of money in 3 months. And I just moved here, right?
Not good.
So it's now also my problem to solve. And we decided that we needed to raise money pretty urgently. And we started that process.
And this is where our real story begins. Because yes. Now you are going out. You, originally an investor in what you thought was a dumb idea, now need to go out and raise money from other investors who you need to convince this is not a dumb idea. And you cannot get anybody to pay attention to it, can you?
No. And so there's a number of things that made this difficult. So this is early 2018, and we're in the middle of what's called a VR winter, right? So there was a VR period when VR is like relatively hot as a category when Oculus was first acquired. And then the first Oculus came out and no one really bought it. Mm-hmm. And so there was like a big boom bubble in VR, and then it became a category people didn't want to invest in. So VR is kind of dead.
And this we should note, happens all the time. There is an emerging technology. It is very exciting. Investors are taking a bet that this is the next frontier of growth. And so there's a rush. There's a rush of founders getting into the space, and then there's a rush of investment into those founders. And it either goes amazingly or it's a bust. And then everybody starts saying, I am not putting any more money into this stupid space that I have wasted a lot of money in. And this is the space that you have just joined. So you are in the VR world during VR winter. Nobody wants to invest.
Yeah. And usually it's a timing issue, right? Like the internet was that way after the bubble, but it became big. And so,
right.
But yes, that is where I found myself. But wait, It gets worse or better. You know, when you think about venture, there's certain categories of businesses that are more or less venture investable. So generally, for example, until fairly recently, Andreessen changed that with Speedrun, but generally, games aren't really a venture backable category because games are content, right? And content tend to not be as sustainable and scalable as a category.
Right. Because so many game makers will have a single hit,
that's
like a
right.
Candy Crush or something, and then be completely unable to replicate it.
Yeah. It's a hits driven business, right? And even when you do have a hit, who knows how long it can be sustainable. So that is one issue. So games are generally not an investable category. Another category that you don't really want to invest in is hardware, because those are very capital intensive businesses, right?
I'm laughing because you're just listing off all the things that this business is, right?
Yeah.
So you've got VR, which nobody wants to invest in. You've got games, which is traditionally a uninvestable category. And then hardware. This is basically the combination of the business that you have joined.
But wait, there's more.
Ah!
So generally, as a VC, you don't want to invest in retail businesses.
Another one. Right.
That's not generally a VC investable category. And
because it's just so hard to scale and to multiply revenue on?
Capital intensive, slow growth, low margins. You have staff, you have rent, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also, people generally, my network is in Silicon Valley. I moved to Hong Kong, and generally, people in Silicon Valley don't invest internationally. In fact, Andreessen has never invested in a company that was founded as a foreign company. For a long time, they believe that there's something special in the waters of Silicon Valley. Sandbox VR was the very first company Andreessen ever invested in that was not founded in the United States.
Interesting. Although you're skipping ahead there to the punchline of it, so we're going to learn how to get there. And just for the one person who may not know what you mean when you say Andreessen, you're talking about Andreessen Horowitz, which is also known as A16Z, in case you ever say it like that, which is founded by Marc Andreessen and Ben Horowitz, and a leading Silicon Valley tech investment firm.
That's right. So that's what we know about raising money. And there I was trying to raise for a VR company, making hardware, making games, operating a retail business, founded out of Hong Kong. So I felt the chances of us raising were like pretty close to zero. It rounds down to zero.
Yeah.
But I also knew that when you're raising and when you're selling, you just need one yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like one person to say yes, that's all you need. And so with sales, it's somewhat of a numbered game. You talk to as many people as you can, and there's a conversion funnel. And so I, having had experience raising money twice before, I decided that, okay, we're going to go and raise. And I put together this deck. And the first thing I did after the deck is I did some research, and I basically put this Coda page, this like Notion, like project management software that I've been using, and put together a list of every VC who has ever invested in VR or retail or games or consumer anything, basically every VC, right?
Yeah, right.
And I organized it by basically first geography, because it's a Hong Kong based company. And in order to really get the company, you have to be able to try the experience, because it's very hard to describe if you haven't been to Sandbox VR. It's just, it's such an impressive experience, but on paper, it just sounds really stupid.
The reason you're doing that is because you need to know what investors are at least going to be speaking your language, who will have appreciated opportunities in these different spaces already, which is something that a lot of very early stage founders who are raising for the first time don't consider, right? They just start hitting up investors almost at random, or at least it becomes kind of who can they get in contact with. But what they're not realizing is that they need to be able to appreciate and understand the opportunity in front of them, because the more they understand it, the less risky they will perceive it to be.
That's right. That's right. So we need people to understand it. But in this particular situation, we needed people who could go to Hong Kong.
Right.
Right.
or rather, who are willing to go to Hong Kong. Anybody could go to Hong Kong, but are they going to actually fly out there to see your stupid retail business?
So that's a big ask. Yeah. Right. So you want to talk to the Hong Kong local investors first, and maybe people in Asia. So I had this list. And then I also had an evaluation of how likely they were to invest and in different tiers. And I think the highest percentage I had was like maybe like 15%, because this investor really liked VR and games, and they turned out to not invest.
Yeah.
And for some other investors like Andreessen, I had them at basically 0%, or I think it was like 1% or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way. They're like a really great investor, a tier one investor.
Yeah.
Right. No way they're going to do it. So put together the list, started pounding the pavement, doing outreach, pitched as many investors as Asia, and got a lot of questions about the financials, the forecast. And I'm like, we have one store. This is like, there's no real financials here, but the one store is looking really good. Like, it's completely sold out. You know, margins are really good, but like, the people wanted to understand the numbers of the business so they invest. And generally, when that is the main focus, people didn't invest. So we then, or basically—
Is that, by the way, a general rule? Do you find that if you're reaching out to investors and the thing that they focus on exclusively is the numbers, that they're not going to invest? Is that the case?
Yeah. So it's good to double click on that, because that depends on your stage on the investor, right? The further you along as a business, the more the numbers become important. But at the earliest of stages, it's really not about the numbers. It's about the team and what you want to do, and the market and opportunity you're seeing. And it's a lot more about story. And what I found is that sort of like the less well-known, less well-respected investors in terms of tiering, they will come and they care about the numbers. Mm-hmm. But I think that's sort of a category mismatch, in that like, if you want to invest in numbers, you should be investing in public companies or later stage companies. Right? Those numbers are there. At the earliest stages, there are no numbers, and the numbers aren't even that particularly important.
Yeah.
And so what I have found is that at the earliest stages, the better the investor is, the less they care about the numbers, which is quite rational. But when I tiered it, I wanted to talk to the best investors last, right?
Yeah.
And so what I found is that the higher level of the investor, the higher quality of the investor I talked to, they asked about the numbers, and the more they cared about what we're building and the product experience.
That's very interesting, but also would super track with what so many investors, yourself included, say, which is, especially at the early stages, I'm investing in the founder, not in the company. And if you're investing in the founder, well, then the founder doesn't have numbers attached to them. Founder has trust and vision and so on. And if you're obsessed with the company, then you're only interested in how much money that company is making.
So that's what I've seen with investors. And so we ran out of money, basically. Mm-hmm. And what Steve, the founder, did is he had some savings for his business. And he spent, I think it was like almost $1 million, $500,000, $1 million, building and launching our first retail store in the Bay Area. It's at the Hillsdale Mall in San Mateo.
And this is because, I would imagine, if we step back, you have listed off a whole bunch of problems. Some of those problems are, we are in multiple categories that are hard to raise money for. This is a VR company, it's a game company, it's a retail company, and so on. And then there, you have to list off all these other reasons why it's been very hard to get people to pay attention, including the location. You got to get people to fly out to Hong Kong and so on. And so you must be looking at these and thinking, well, which one of these are changeable? And you can't change that it's a VR company or that it's a game company or that it's a retail company. It just is. If you remove some of those factors, you don't have the product that you have. But you can change the location. It's expensive, but it's doable. And so that is presumably the reason why you chose, well, if we're going to make any kind of move here, the move is to just eliminate the barrier that we're able to eliminate, which is the Pacific Ocean.
That's right. And all credit goes to Steve, the founder, on this one, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes a difference as a founder. Like, with any successful company, there are multiple near-death events always. Mm-hmm. There's all multiple moments where you have to bet the entire farm and hope that, you know, it comes up red.
Yeah.
And in this case, it wasn't just betting the company. He was betting his entire life savings.
Right.
And he did that. And then that made it a lot easier. So I had a network in Silicon Valley.
Do you remember the conversation that you had with him about that? Like, did he come to you and ask, do you think this is a good idea? Did he just decide this is how he was going to bet his life savings? Like, watching from a close distance on a decision like that, how did that decision get made?
Yeah, I remember being told, is my vague recollection. This is like 8 years ago now.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to take, you know, we're out of money, but I think this, I'm going to make this bet. And I was like, are you sure? This is a big bet. And I can't guarantee we're going to raise. Even with my network, this is going to be really, really, really hard. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, no, this is what I want to do. And I said, okay, then I will do my best. And, you know, when you see a leader going all in, it makes you want to walk through walls.
Yeah.
Right. And that was a pretty clear statement that this person was all in.
Right. So what happens?
So then I invited some of my friends to start going to the store. And of course, I went down the list of VCs to talk to. And one of the people who came early is Ryan Hoover from Product Hunt. Mm-hmm. And you come to our store and you bring some friends and you get this video at the end, right, that we automatically generate. You're in this green room and everyone's screaming and it's very fun. And of course, he shared it on Twitter. And the people had never seen it before. It was a really fun video. So people started retweeting it. And
that can't be by accident, by the way. I assume that like the experience had been crafted to give people a very shareable visual, presumably so that they would share it on social.
Yeah, that was part of the business and technology that the team built. Everyone gets this video of their experience at the end. And we call it a DGE. The word for the future is the demand generation engine. that was why we did it. And so he posted.
You know what's funny, Siki, is that kind of thing used to be something that companies would charge for, right? It would be a add-on revenue generator at the end. It's like, hey, you had a great experience and now buy the photo. Kind of like, you know, you take a roller coaster and then at the end they try to sell you a $50 shot of you going down. But now people have realized like that is the small dollars. Trying to get the $50 is small. What would be better is for you to give the photo to the person for free and then they post it on Instagram, on Twitter, and then you get 10 new clients out of it and that's considerably better. So it's like an interesting shift. Yeah.
And we weren't open as a store, so we were invite only. So Ryan posted it. I brought more people. to the store, and then people started asking for invites to try this experience because it looks crazy and fun. And it very quickly, the dynamic became that it became a status symbol to get invited to this so that you can share this video.
Mm.
Right? Like, oh, people want to know that, oh, they're important in some way, and you weren't important if you didn't get invited to this where you got a chance to share the video. So people started asking for invitations just on that, for that reason alone.
Yeah.
And so we were building up some momentum over the course of a week or two. In the meantime, we're also talking to investors. And again, you'll only need to get one person to say yes. I'm like, we just need one term sheet, right?
Right.
And the reason
for that is not because you just need one investor, but because if you get one, then others will follow.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. So I met up with Andrew Chen.
Mm-hmm.
Who
I know Andrew from a general partner at Andreessen Horowitz.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so I was catching up with him, and I had actually no expectation that they would be interested at all, because I just thought this is just too crazy of a business for a firm like Andreessen.
Yeah.
So I was just describing what we're doing, and I was like, look, it's just, you know, I know it's pretty wild, but, you know, if you're interested, we'd love to give you a demo. He's like, actually, no, that sounds really interesting.
Hmm.
Like, that sounds just, you know, the kind of crazy company that we enjoy. It just sounds so weird and so impossible. And the following Saturday, Andrew and Mark Andreessen showed up at the store.
Wow.
And we were very nervous, shocked, but also had very low expectations. We're just happy he was there.
Right.
And he was in that experience, and he had the widest grin the entire time. And he was just nodding his head going, yep, 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 yep. And I was like, oh, he's having a good time. And afterwards, Mark stayed with us for the entire afternoon.
Wow.
Talking about the business, talking about the firm. And at that point, I started feeling, maybe they like this. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a chance. And then what happened is we got invited to the partnership meeting. So most VCs, they have a partner meeting on Mondays where they go through the deals for founders to pitch them the partnership.
Mm-hmm.
So pitch a partnership on a Monday.
Yeah.
And the pitch, I think, went pretty well. And at some point, Mark asked, how much would it cost to get one in my house? And I said, funny you should ask, the retail price for this is approximately one term sheet.
It's a good answer.
And we left the pitch. I thought it went pretty well. I wasn't sure. So I text Andrew. I was like, so how did it go? And the answer was, what he replied with is, what are you guys doing tonight? And I said, well, we're pitching more investors. And he says, well, the entire partnership wants to come over and play VR and have dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And he meant the entire partnership. And he was like, how can you do that? And I said, no, we have investor meetings. Then he says, what are you guys doing right now? I said, oh, we're just hanging out at our store, you know, preparing for our investor meetings.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, okay, we're going to come over right now. And about 15 minutes later, the entire general partnership of Andreessen showed up at the store.
Wow.
Every single partner.
Crazy.
And they went, they all played, and then they were pitching us the entire afternoon. And then they did some due diligence. So that night, Andrew and Lee Jin, I think another partner, flew to Las Vegas to try out a few competitors.
Mm-hmm.
They flew back the next day and said, okay, we need to talk terms. I want to hang out. Let's hang out. So we met up at an In-N-Out in Millbrae at 10 in the afternoon, hashing out terms on a napkin.
Amazing.
And we shook on those terms around like midnight. And that's how we raised that round.
Wow. Which ended up being how large?
$68 million.
$68 million.
Yeah.
Incredible. What do you think ultimately got them over the multiple barriers that you outlined at the beginning? You just got rid of one, which was location. And by just having something down the street, you were able to get someone like Andrew Chen to show up. Because, well, that wasn't that hard. All you had to do was drive down the street and have an hour to kill at this thing. But the partner meeting must have involved these questions of, well, we don't typically invest in games. We don't typically invest in retail. Also, aren't we done investing in VR? What do you think it was that got you through all of that?
Well, the pitch was pretty good. And they liked it so much that actually they did a video breakdown on their YouTube. And it's the only one they've ever done where they basically went through the pitch deck. We redacted some slides together. And they talked about what they were thinking, how they were reacting to this pitch slide by slide.
Oh, interesting.
It's called the Asus Things Pitch Room. But the business was also like good. We were the number one rated attraction in Hong Kong on TripAdvisor. We were number two, by the way, is Hong Kong Disneyland.
Yeah. Wow.
So
wow,
it was a very good business.
Yeah.
But all of those are important. But what the thing is, you only need one person to say yes. And that really is dependent on like, if the person is interested in what you're doing, and people are interested in different things. So the thing about Mark is that he's a nerd, and this is what he told me later. He's a nerd, and his dream is to one day be in the Star Trek holodeck, the Matrix.
Right.
That was a thesis for his investment in Oculus, right? But a VR headset, even today, isn't quite that experience. Right. The distance between that and the Star Trek holodeck experience was fairly wide. But the experience that we had was by far the closest thing that you can get to a holodeck experience. You're completely transported to a different world. Your entire body is fully captured. You can kick, jump. You know, it all works. And so when he was in that experience, he was giddy.
Yeah.
It was his childhood dream come true. And that's why the firm invested. And not everyone's going to be Mark, but we were lucky that that was what he wanted. He was been wanting since he was a kid. And that's what the product was.
It is an incredible stroke of luck to be able to deliver to someone like Mark Andreessen a fulfillment of a childhood dream. But Siggy, as you think back on this story and then think about how it can be instructive to others, you can't exactly engineer that very specific outcome. Find the amazing investor and then deliver to them the thing that they've always dreamed about. But maybe you can do something a little like it, which is understand investors personally enough that you know exactly what they're going to respond to. But I don't know. What do you think the takeaway is here, and what part of this is replicatable?
So for us, it wasn't a second. I had no idea how Mark was going to react. I knew nothing much about him other than he invented a web browser.
Yeah.
Right?
A Netscape, for those wondering. Yeah.
But I think what's true about me and about Steve is that we look at this, and I looked at this. This is an impossible situation. And yes, the outcome ended up being really good. But we would not have that outcome if we didn't choose to be in an impossible situation and go forward anyway.
Yeah.
But no company becomes successful without doing that, without making those bets multiple times. You're because just in the worst, most impossible situations all the time. And the difference is most people who don't make it give up. And for really good reason.
Yeah. Not everyone's going to bet their life savings. But
that's
what that really bought wasn't just a storefront in California. What that really bought was more shots on goal. And the more shots on goal ultimately got you the one that went right
there. No one, most people wouldn't have started a company with an idea that seems so stupid.
Yeah.
Most people would not have bet their life savings on this. And, you know, the social pressure is like, people want to do things that give them respect or things that make sense, and they want to be admired. They don't want to take as many risks. And those are all rational things, but those aren't the qualities that separate a founder that ultimately makes it with people who don't.
Siki, final question. What, if anything, did you learn from this experience that you live now at your current company, Runway?
The wonderful thing about having these experiences, no matter what outcome they end up being, is that it builds this muscle mentally where, let's say I'm raising money with a good situation or bad situation, I know for sure I've seen worse. Right? It's like, oh, you think this raise is going to be hard? Like, it's not anywhere near as hard as that raise. Like, there's not, I don't think there's going to be another raise I'm going to do that's going to be harder than that one. And so just like knowing that this is not the hardest thing and having seen it is highly valuable, because a lot of this is about mindset.
Yeah.
You're going to be in these tough situations all the time. And if you've seen it before, then you're going to have not be as impacted, have a sense of optimism. And that's what's required for your team too.
Yeah. The more you see, the more you can stomach. Siki Chen, this is so great. What a great story. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. Really enjoy this.
And that's our episode. Now let's keep the conversation going. I write a newsletter called One Thing Better, where each week I offer one new way to be successful and satisfied and build a career or company you love. You can find it at onethingbetter.email. That's a web address. Just plug it into a browser. onethingbetter.email. And if you get one of those emails and reply, it goes straight to my inbox and I will get back to you. Problem Solvers comes out every Monday morning, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. The show is produced by Emily Holmes and Money News Network. My name is Jason Pfeiffer. See you next week.